The last speaker of this morning, I should say, James Turner, has unfortunately been taken ill, so he will not be attending, the symposium. So we're jumping to the last speaker this morning, Mr. Johan Omen from the Institute for Sound and Vision, who will talk about open images and the creative reuse of footage. Welcome, Johan.
Is the mic switched on? Yeah? Okay, yeah, excellent. Yeah. Good morning. My name is Johan Omen, and I work at the head of R&D, the Institute for Sound and Vision. I'm also a researcher at the VU University in Amsterdam. I have to apologize for the people that were in Amsterdam in April, where I give quite a similar talk. The thing is that I submitted my paper to the GTS in November, and then I was invited to talk at the Eye Institute only in February, and I didn't want to decline their invitation. But there are some new stuff that has been going on for the past few weeks for those who've been also to Amsterdam. Okay, that said, title of my presentation is overly ambitious. Actually, what I would like to show is two examples of participatory culture and at work in archives, specifically at Sound and Vision. For those who were here on Monday, Jim Lindner gave a fabulous talk about the parallels between glass-stained windows and digitization practice. And I was thinking, what is the link between, what are the parallels between glass-stained windows and what I'm going to tell you about in the next 20 or so minutes? And actually, it is... it's not about looking at these glass-stained windows. My presentation is, what can you do with having all these glass pieces? What can you do to remix? What can you do to repurpose those glass-stained windows? Anyway, I'm not. You can decide after my talk if this is a good analogy. But to put this in context. Also, this morning we had two excellent presentations talking about data and migration, which in this image sits on the left-hand side. There's an excellent report called from the Preserving Digital Television Project in the U.S., and one of their quotes is, without long-term planning, digitization projects can come to behave like black holes in the sky, saying that you can't regard preservation projects as projects, but it's rather a sort of a new way of thinking. But what I will be talking about is moving towards the right-hand side. It also links to the title of the of this JTS, which is Digital Challenges and Digital Opportunities. So what I will be talking about is the opportunities. It's about the reuse. This is a quote from Clay Shirky, and he was this was a quote from late 2009 when he was talking about the future of newspapers. But I think this quote also applies to audiovisual heritage. He said, public reuse produces a kind of value that doesn't just come from publication, it comes from republication and reuse. So this work, what I'm going to present, is part of the Images for the Future project, which was already described briefly by my colleague Roelands yesterday. So I don't have to go in too much detail there. I think this is a very nice picture. It shows the reuse of our archive content over the past few years, up until the last quarter of 2009. And what you see here are the number of orders or requests from the professionals in the Netherlands. So these are media professionals using our archive. And what this picture shows is that since JTS 2007, so the last JTS, there's a huge sort of transformation. You know, Sound and Vision went digital at the end of 2006. So from that moment, all the daily broadcasts are ingested in our storage systems in digital files. And what this image shows is that that if you look at the number of the total reuse since 2007 has more than doubled, and also you see that the amount of reuse of digital files is it's now an enormous part of the total amount of reuse. And this is just in a period of 3 years. I found it quite striking. That's why I'm showing this. So many of the archives have now been, you know, been hooked up to large storage systems. Either material is ingested in digital form, or it is digitized. So this is quite a common image, and what you also see that in the past, over the past years, there are many new ways to provide access to this content. Like many archives, Sound and Vision started out with interfaces primarily targeted at broadcast professionals, which you see on the left, but over the past years we've been also moving towards public access, creating exhibitions such as the 360 degrees 3D cinema, which was really exciting. We had this installation in Amsterdam in December. Portals specifically for education. And then there are projects that are targeted towards user-generated content and metadata. And in the 17 or so minutes I've left, I will elaborate on two of those projects. One is called Open Images, and one is called Waisda, the video labeling game. Okay, but just to show you a little bit of context, I would like to show 2.5 minutes of the following clip. It's from the Open Video Alliance.
The power of the image is so important.
Video is a really good tool.
That is the point. So the fact that now there are tools available for people to do new things with archival content. And this is a quote from Henry Jenkins from MIT, saying that if it doesn't spread, it's dead. And I don't know which content which context this was used. But anyway, it was, for us, it was the starting point of thinking about, okay, given the fact that we have we are now doing this large digitization project, is there a way to engage actively with more actively with end users? And we came up with a platform called Open Images. That looks like this. You can go online at openimages.eu. And it's an open platform for online access to audiovisual archive material. And the content on this platform is available for free and creative reuse. So the current list of contributors are listed here. And more are following. This platform was launched in September. Our idea was to build something open in the widest sense. So we're using an existing open source media platform called MMBase, quite similar to, for example, Drupal. We're using the Octeora codec for our videos. And we're using HTML5, which means that video can be watched in a browser without installing a player. It has to be a modern browser, so, for example, Firefox will do fine. We're using an open API, OAI, the protocol for metadata harvesting, and also Atom Feeds. And as a license, we adopted Creative Commons licenses, and our preferred license for distributing archive content is CC by share alike, which in practical terms means that everybody can use the material as long as they state that the origin of the of the video. And the aim is to have 3,000 items from our own collection online in 2 years from now, and we are already halfway. We're not supplying the high definition files. We're using we're distributing MPEG 1 and OGG and H.264. This is like internet quality. So this is sort of the raw picture. There's this large collection of sound and vision. Large part is digitized at the moment within Images for the Future. A part of that material is actually owned by Sound and Vision, notably newsreels and other commissioned films, for example. And then a part of that is available through Open Images. So we launched this a few months ago, and in the meantime, we advertised it widely. You now see the images from our newsreel collection popping up in quite, sometimes graphic, but let's say quite interesting remixes. For example, they turn up on YouTube. And also we've been collaborating with museums, for example, that are now also working on websites that, for example, the museum Boijmans in Rotterdam. They have a channel called ArtTube, where they have specific clips about Boijmans. They actually approach us and say, "Well, can you make available some images from Rotterdam, so that we can use those images on also on the Boijmans van Beuningen website?" This is a collaboration with the VPRO broadcasters. We did a project with them on the largest theme, the city. So now we're collaborating with different parties in selecting content to be available under a CC license on Open Images. So just a few screenshots. This is the homepage, so here you see that. So you can play the file. So if you have a Firefox, you can play directly from the browser. Otherwise, it will use another plugin. And then it's available in multiple versions. So creative reuse is one aspect. The other one is this. It's a collaboration with Wikipedia. At the moment, there is not too much video on Wikipedia. Some of the reasons is that they are quite stringent in the regarding the, for example, license that is used and also the file format that is used. Open Images was designed in a way that we actually complied with those rules. What we created is a link with Wikimedia Commons. So everything that is published on Open Images is also available on Wikipedia. I think this has quite some impact. For example, let's see if I got. So for example, this is a lemma, a page about the Dutch city Almere. Someone took the clip from Open Images and used it to enrich this Wikipedia page. For us, it's quite interesting because the way that Wikipedia works is quite easy to look up, you know, where certain clips are being used. So everything that is in Wikimedia, we can track its usage in which pages. Another thing that happened, surprising things. For example, this is a lemma or a page of the former mayor of Amsterdam. So somebody saw his face popping up in one of the videos on Open Images. This person created a screenshot and then uploaded the screenshot to Wikipedia. And as you can see, that it states here that the source is Sound and Vision, which was something that we couldn't think of when we started on this. One thing that we're currently working on is to also publish the videos on Open Images on mobiles. This is a collaboration between the Sound and Vision and the War Archives, and the topic is war monuments. There's quite some footage available from Sound and Vision and the Eye Institute, a former film museum, but also the National Archives. The National Archives uploads videos to Flickr, and Eye Film Institute and Sound and Vision upload material to Open Images. And then we link to the Wikipedia pages of the monuments, and also to the more elaborate descriptions of the monuments available on the Liberation Foundation website. And then this is ported to an iPhone application that looks like this. So what happens is there are multiple ways of accessing this content. One is that you can say, okay, which monuments are near where I am now, for example. People are also encouraged to upload photographs or upload their own descriptions about these monuments. This is quite exciting stuff, I think. Open Images is working together with the partners in the EU Screen Best Practice Network. And so what we're trying to do is establish relations with some of the archives involved in EU Screen to also upload material to the Open Images. Okay. The second project I would like to talk about is WAISDA. It's our video labeling project. It was inspired by the work of Louis von Ahn and others. And the idea was to create a game to help the crowd. That the crowd could help us in annotating video. So we're using fun and competition as the main motivation. So just perhaps you know these examples. The ESP game has been around for quite some time. It's a video labeling game it's now hosted at Google. And the Steve Museum tagger is, I think, the prime example of a tagging game in the heritage environment. So why would we create a video labeling game? One is that we would like to bridge the semantic gap. We've done some analysis of our query logs in the past few months, and we saw a discrepancy between the terms that our professional catalogers enter and the terms that are used by end users. Naturally, catalogers, they know the thesaurus that they are working with, but this knowledge is just not, the users don't have this knowledge. So there's a semantic gap that we would like to close. So talking the same language, in short. Then there's also the motivation to add more fine-grained knowledge. There's people outside the archive might have much more elaborate knowledge about a given topic. For example, if there's a stock footage of an airplane, maybe our catalogers don't know exactly which airplane this is, but there might be someone that actually knows the name, the build, etc., etc. We also think that semantic tagging will be important in designing the workflows of the future. Yesterday, Roland elaborated on all kinds of automatic metadata generation. Well, we think that also social tagging will be yet another way of enriching the metadata. And the fourth motivation is that it was a cool project to do. So it was to work with the public and see how the public is engaging with our material. Okay, so this is what the game looked like. So there are four channels in the from the homepage with different genres of videos. So every channel, behind every channel, videos are running in a loop. So users go to pick one of the videos they would like to tag, and then they start tagging. And if there's agreement between two or more users, then they receive points. That's the motivation. So this is, and also we've worked with integration of Twitter. So people will there would be Twitter, and there are Twitter announcements saying, "Okay, please come to Waisda and play this video labeling game." This is in maybe if it's a good idea if I just play it one more time. It's not that long. So this is the homepage. And if there aren't any players available at that time, at that specific moment, then the players play against a robot. So they're never playing alone. Okay, so if there's mutual agreement, people receive points. That's the main point. So and there are other scoring mechanisms to create various tag incentives. For example, if you make up a new term, you get extra points. If you type very fast, you get more points, etc., etc. So generating traffic was quite a challenge. We knew that from the very beginning, and that's why we decided to collaborate with one of the largest public broadcasters in the Netherlands, KRO. And they actually posted links to the Waisda game on their website, and this generated an enormous amount of traffic. So the sample that we took in our evaluation is the sample between May and November of last year, and in that time we managed to gather 340,000 tags, which is quite elaborate. Also, taking into account that the Netherlands is not an extremely large country, there are many of the terms. Of course, the terms are timestamps, so we exactly know when a given term is tagged within a video. And we found that in many cases there was a match, so there was agreement between the tags. This is shown on the left hand in the left hand diagram. So in 40% of the cases, there was actually agreement between players about a certain tag in a certain time span. So looking at all this disagreement, we also tried to determine whether or not this was actually a valid Dutch term. So we compared it to our own thesaurus, the GTAA, and also we compared it to Conetto, which is a word list of all Dutch words. And here we found that one third of all the words for which there was mutual agreement actually was a valid Dutch word. So you can also say that from the these 340,000 words, there was a lot of rubbish. But as we had so many terms, it doesn't matter too much because we can filter out all the terms that are, say, not valid or not. There's no agreement on. I think it's quite interesting to see that. So the green part is the match with our in-house thesaurus, and you see that the number of that there are lots of words that didn't exist in our thesaurus are actually tagged and are valid Dutch words. And this was part of the motivation So trying to bridge the semantic gap, we can determine from looking at this graph that actually now there's the words that are used in tagging are more diverse, for example, than the terms in our thesaurus. Okay, I have just two more slides, and then we can go for coffee. We asked the documentalists at Sound & Vision, are these tags useful? And here we found that there's a difference between user tags that are tagged to that are linked to reality television, and opposed to tags that are used for documentary film. We found out that using such an environment for in a documentary television series provide much more useful tags than if you do this in a reality setting. This was one of the findings. Okay, next question is: what do you do with it? Will this create? How do you present this outside metadata? I think that this is now ongoing work, which we are doing in the scope of the Prestone Prime project. This is an example that I quite like. It's from the Powerhouse Museum, where they actually, in the search interface, they state, okay, these are tags from users. So then you can, as a user, you can say, okay, you can value this as you like. We also think that this in such an environment can be helpful, for example, if you are working with volunteers. And we created the idea of enabling semantic tagging, where you don't say to users, okay, please, go ahead and play this game, but you are more, you ask specific questions about, please label this video looking at the who, what, where, when. So this is more, say, providing guidance. And this, we think this could be helpful if there are a group of volunteers working at your archive and they are, say, willing to go further than playing a game. So this would be another kind of motivation. And so with these two examples, I hope I've given you some ideas or inspiration on how you can engage users to work with archive material. You can follow me on Twitter if you like, and I'm of course available for questions.
Thank you, Anne. That was very interesting. I have two questions, very different ones. Mm-hmm. The first, you said that you used news serials in your open screen. Is there a transfer of rights when you get news serials in your archive, or have you to go back to the source to have the rights and to put it on the site? And the other question is, what is your effort in man-woman power to moderate all these activities of social tagging? Because, of course, somebody has to look around this and to eliminate what's not valuable and so on. How many people are working on this in your institution?
Okay, yeah. So regarding the first question, these newsreels actually are with Sound & Vision. So to some respect, we can do whatever we like with it. But we are very careful in the kind of the material we put on open images. So we're not going to, for example, put material from the Second World War online, for example. Also, we're not putting online material linked to our royal family. And also, every selection we make, we also link to the business department of Sound & Vision, because some of the material is also a value for commercial purposes and available in our commercial footage library. So there's a whole process going into this. Regarding social tagging, actually, there's no one working on this. The reason is, and I try to explain that it's actually because there is mutual agreement between terms, and you can say, okay, if there are 20 people agreeing that there is a cow in this scene, then probably it is a cow. So we try to generate a lot of traffic, and then the measurement is we have to set the bar, say, okay, if we say 5 people agree or 10 people agree, but at a certain point we say, okay, it's a valid term. There's been quite some research also by the Steve Museum project, and they actually found out that that in these environments there is hardly any misuse of the of the tagging environment.
If you just went back to that slide that you had up there with the graph of the GTAA and the Cornetto.
Yeah.
It looks like 2/3 of your GTAA terms aren't in the Dutch vocabulary. Can you explain that?
This is about exact matches only. And in the GTA, we use only plurals. So this has to be the reason.
Every time I see a presentation from the Film Institute, or I, as it is called now, Netherlands Film Museum, or from you, I want to emigrate to Amsterdam and delve into this wonderful paradise where everything is preserved and everything is accessible. We people in the normal world have the problem that 95% of what we're holding in our film archives cannot be accessed because it is owned by someone else and under restriction of some sort or another. And now we have become a museum of television only, also. And we managed with a big, big effort to have about, at this point, I think 3,000 programs in our archive that can be used in-house. But we would be never allowed to make them accessible over the internet or any other installation that you suggest, a video game or reuse and all those wonderful, useful things. And certainly the institutions that give us these programs, they don't even want any tagging or anything done with it. How do you think in the short term, long term, middle term, can we overcome these obstacles in other places where we don't live in this Dutch paradise?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, there are many ways to answer this this question. I think, and this was a quote from this is a quote from Rick Brenninger, who was visiting Amsterdam 2 years ago. He said that if this copyright regime stays the same as it is now, we are creating repositories of inaccessibility, which sums it up quite nicely. Because we are within Images for the Future, we invest in lots of millions in digitization of these assets, but then there is only a small section of the material that is actually owned by us, so there are a few ways. For example, we work together with the rights holders closely, and we try to also convince them of the mutual benefit. So if materials is being reused, they also get a part of the profit, for example. Another way of addressing your question is looking at the fact that every minute, 24 hours of materials uploaded to YouTube, and there's probably 1 hour of that. Is coming from archive. I don't know, but there's a considerable amount of archive footage now available on YouTube, and I think then looking at this discrepancy between all the how careful we are working with rights holders, and if you see that on the other side, most people would think that YouTube is the de facto television archive of the world. There's also political pressure, I think, in being more open towards video. So you can say that it's maybe this issue of copyright partly will be solved over time, because the current situation just is not. It cannot hold for too long. Before we know it, all the relevant stuff is already on YouTube, and we don't want that to happen for obvious reasons.
Hello, I have a question also. While Martin Körber is calling this the paradise, I would make a comment from the other side and say, for us as audiovisual archivists, this is more or less the horror vision, because you find your material modified, spread all over the world, annotated, whatever. Is there any strategy of authentication and of finding out what is the original and how many copies and the history of the copies and the history of the modification and of the annotation and whatever happens?
Yeah, so also no two ways to answer this question. So since last month, the amount of visits to Facebook in the US are bigger than the amount of visits to Google, to a search engine. So it's like the whole web is going social, and the central question is: do you want to be part of this? And we are saying yes, we do want to be part of this. In the example I showed of Wikipedia, it's quite easy to track where content is reused. Because provenance is provided next to every object, and you know, on the second day of the symposium, there was a presentation about INA, about content tracking. So you can also put in place such technologies if you like. But then there's again the issue of fair use, and you maybe don't want to be so very strict. So you have to let go to gain and to be to stay relevant. For us, it's there's no way we cannot elaborate. We cannot be part of this social way the web is going. So at So at Sound and Vision, there was the questions about authenticity. At Sound and Vision, we are working with 250 people. 60 of them are professional documentalists, and they are responsible for creating very high standard metadata records. What semantic tagging does is to add a new dimension. But there's always going to be the quality assurance. I think the strongest point is that as an archive, you are going to be part of the web. You are going to be linked. But because people know that it is from a trusted source, they would come and look at your records because they know that there's it is of high quality.
I agree, but as soon as
I'm sorry, but I will be here in the break.
Yeah, just one thing about tagging. The way you do it, you will average out every special knowledge because you're comparing between many users, and maybe it will come out that on the image is a cow, but if somebody enters what special type of cow it is, it will be averaged out by the comparison. So I doubt how much additional information you get compared to any documentalist doing the job.
Mm-hmm. So, I will keep this very short. One thing that we gain, regardless looking at the contents, is we gain timestamped metadata. At the moment, what our documentalists do is provide metadata covering an entire program. We lack the ability to pinpoint about the contents of a certain fragment. You know, so I completely take your comment that maybe this type of cow will be filtered out, which is a shame. But then still, we have the knowledge about there is a cow in this specific segment, something we don't know at the moment. But there's much more research to be done on this part.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Johan. I have noticed that you are welcome to pick up tickets for the two events tonight at the Film House, at the Cinema Ticket. So there's both a panel on documentary and there's a 70mm screening. And there will be tickets outside here in the coffee break. and I urge you to be back at 11. We will be screening a short film just before the end of the coffee break, so 10 minutes to 11 to lure some of you back. It's a DCP created from a scanned nitrate negative and a captured sound negative. So you're very welcome to come in 10 minutes before the end of the coffee break to see that. But the program will recommence at 11 o'clock.